Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason.
I didn't say where you worked last week.
You didn't?
I just said, here's Tim.
Yeah.
It's like his reputation precedes him.
I think people know now.
Something like
that. 6+ years at The Hollywood Reporter.
I know. I mean, should we talk about, so Janice Min is leaving. It's a little inside baseball, but she's sort of like your big boss, and she's and has been running a Hollywood Reporter and is leaving.
She is. She's staying with the parent company. She will be around and available, which is great for me because I love her dearly. She's the one who hired me. She's been my boss the whole time. Which is interesting always because, you know, I'm out of the loop here. I'm over in the Rockridge Bureau.
Yeah.
And sort of kind of not respond, you know, belonging to anyone. And it was always nice to have her have my back. That's always good when she's the main person. But, you know, she is going to be doing other stuff at the parent company, and which involves kind of like media expansion and acquisitions, et cetera, et cetera. So, she's not going too far, and it was interesting to find out. I didn't really know this. I don't think a lot of people knew like that. She's actually a major owner of THR.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I'm sort of kidding, but not kidding when I phrase it this way. Like when I know of her through you, right? So I had this picture of like she's your boss, and she's running the show with the Hollywood Reporter. Then I read this article about her, and I'm like, damn. Tim knows some really impressive people because she like had an ownership stake, and the way other organizations portrayed it is like did this huge turnaround to make THR very successful now as a digital property when it was kind of floundering and still doing a daily thing and all of that. And it's like quite a turnaround story that they didn't mention that you were, you know, part of her grand strategy to turn things around. But, you know, she hired you. She did bring you in, and that was a change in strategy, too, as part of her big thing. So, yeah, it was very impressive to read about her accomplishments and the fact that she, you know, had an ownership stake in this thing that she turned around too. Yeah.
Well, yeah, she and, you know, it was her vision. Her vision was executed. She was very smartly, obviously, got into, and I didn't know, obviously, the extent of it, but she was very smart to get into an ownership situation. Like, that's just like believing in yourself and taking some stake in the company and knowing that you could make it work. And she's, you know, she's been all obviously confident in her whole life and professional life. And she really did make it work. I loved her though, because like, I didn't know anything about like Us Weekly and how she turned that around. She basically almost killed People Magazine with Us. And, cause I don't read like celebrity stuff. So when I've told you this story before, but like when she called me to offer me the job when I was at the Chronicle, I didn't know who she was, and when she said like the Hollywood Reporter, I knew it as like this little onion skin 8-page or 16-page like daily rag that was struggling to be out of Variety's shadow. So I was like, first thing I told her, I was like, you know, first of all, let me save you a little time here. I don't think you can afford me. And then like which she laughs at to this day with me, didn't hang up on me, which was good, because later she was like, I think we can, and are you aware of what we're doing? And I was like, you know, like no. She's like, you should probably look at that.
Yeah, read up on.
Get back to me. And of course I didn't, and then the next time she called me, I was just like, well, why would I leave like the Chronicle where I can do anything I want to go? And she's like, well, you know, you should probably look at what we're doing. And then I did. And I was like, oh my God. So she got a very good laugh when I called her back and said, okay. And you know, when I went down, so I flew down and I interviewed with her, and I just said, what's your vision here? What's the story? I mean, I can't believe that like, you know, you're taking it. I mean, basically the premise of what made The Hollywood Reporter work so well. And I know a lot of people who listen have never felt the actual physical copy of it, but they took this little thin daily and they turned it into a weekly every Wednesday that was this glossy and long form journalism, which I thought at the time was like, wait, long form journalism? You're going to make like a weekly magazine? And then we put everything that's breaking news, et cetera, on the online and update the website, et cetera. I said, but it seems like a weird thing. And she outlined her vision for what, as a New Yorker who came to Los Angeles and knew what was missing in Los Angeles and in that culture and covering covering the entertainment world in a way that sort of catered to the high end egos and the money and all the stuff that was there. And then, like, she's like, if we do really great work, they're going to come and they're going to show up. And they did. And like literally the day we launched, I think it was like November 3rd or November 10th of 2000, 2010, sorry. We just crushed Variety and they've never been able to recover. In fact, they're, how they look now looks surprisingly like, well, exactly like the THR. So they basically just gave up and copied our model. But yeah, they've never recovered. I mean, they're doing much better now, but we just kind of crushed them on that first day. And so we're heading into almost 7 years. And it's been nice working for her. So it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Great. I love a turnaround story too. And
yeah,
I like to imagine you sitting there at your, you know, it's like, I'm getting paid by a daily newspaper. How could you possibly do me one better?
And, right.
Right.
It is. Well, and that was the thing. Like once I, you know, I certainly had worries at that time that the, and I was plugged in there. I was worried that the Chronicle was probably, I don't know how long it was going to go. I'm happy to see it's still going, but you could see how thin it was getting. When she gave me that, their plan, I thought, dang it, you know, I think this actually is going to work. And so every time, Jason, in the 6+ years since I've been at THR, every time I get my weekly magazine, the physical copy, and see it stuffed with Lux ads, all these luxurious brands and stuff, I'm like, oh, thank you. Advertising still works.
Yeah, it still works. They found a place where it works. Makes sense, really, when you think about it. But yeah.
And then number two there, Matt Bellany, who's it's just a nonstop, typical THR mode, nonstop worker. Even having a baby hasn't slowed him down. He's just caught in, like, I think the guy like works like 36 hours a day. And he's taken over. He's great. He called me to reassure me that things were going to be good. And so I'm confident going forward.
It's cool. Nice. It's great. Yeah. Let's talk about some TV. How about that?
Let's do that.
What do you think? So big... Little Lies is...
Wow, I don't know why I just laughed, but I guess I do know because I wrote about it.
Yeah, what was the... It's not Pretty Little Liars. It's totally different. It's Big Little Lies.
And it's Big Little... Yeah.
And as your little bottom line on THR.com says, rich white people problems. Bad... and comma, badly told. Boom. Yeah. Body blow. Bang.
That is a pretty... That's a pretty accurate summation. I know a lot of people were going to like this because they liked, there was a best-selling book about it. And the fans of the book are going to want it to, you know, be a thing on television. It's a limited series. And it is a star-studded, marquee-heavy series. You know, Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman and Laura Dern and on and on. And there's just so many great actors who are playing parts in this thing. But I got to tell you, I went into it actually positive. I didn't read the book, but I was positive, like, man, this is a good cast. I like this idea. And it turns out exactly that. It's like rich white people's problems. And it's manufactured drama of the worst kind. And you just don't like anybody. It starts with a murder, and you don't know who actually was killed or who did the killing. And then you'll find out at the end of these 7 episodes, it's closed ended. But, oh boy, everything about it is like absolutely manufactured drama. And then big soliloquies with dialogue that no human being has ever said to one another outside of like some pretentious essay. Or a book, apparently. But no, does not ring true at all. And I just struggled getting through it. But I'm sure some people are going to be like, ooh, like a soapy drama. You know, I said in my review, it was like an ABC drama with nudity. Mm-hmm. And then noted that I shouldn't have said that because that might sell it.
Yeah, so is the problem that this is a, you know, HBO is making an ABC drama, or is it a problem that they're not doing it well?
I think it's a little bit of both. I am, you know, I want, you know, everybody tries to shoot for some, you know, adaptation of a popular book with a big cast. I mean, that is, for whatever reason, that is crack for every executive. And I think it's really hard for them, because I thought about this. Casey Bloys is a smart dude. And I was thinking, like, okay, well, in the room, you're probably thinking, okay, this is a multi-million selling book. Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman are executive producers, and they want to star in it, and they're going to line up all these other stars. What could possibly go wrong? I mean, if you sit in that room, I think that's probably what you're going to come away with. You're going to say, all right, well, we got a locked in audience. We've got these big names. So we're going to shoot it. It was set in Australia. We're going to move it to Monterey. We're going to have this beautiful thing. I don't want to say that they choosing David E. Kelly as the person to write all the episodes was a bad idea. But I don't know if it was his idea to do how the structure was, because I didn't read the book. But boy, it's such a tired network cliche of using sort of a Greek chorus of people from the community to talk about the characters. It's such a lazy prop, this arc that you stick together where you have this overarching murder and then the police are investigating people in the community and they say all these snarky things that no one ever says in a million years. And you're just like, it's so heavy handed. It's such an anvil. I was just like, oh God. But yeah, it kind of went wrong at every turn. And they had big names, you know, there's a lot of big names attached to this thing beyond the cast, because they've got Jean-Marc Vallée, who's directing it, and he directs all 7 episodes. So I don't know. It seems like everything was there as far as a success, but it never happened.
Hmm. Should HBO be making a show like this? Just a philosophical, like, is this, because it seems kind of comfortable if it truly is like an ABC drama with nudity. It's like, is that a game HBO should be playing? Do you think that like something that's more comfortable and has this kind of similar to something that you would see on a network, or is that dangerous for them?
Well, I that's funny you mentioned that. I was thinking that same thing when I was writing it. And so I was probably 3/4 of the way through banging the review out. And I was like, okay, because I wasn't at TCA. So I was like, let's see if there's anything that they said about it. And I found a quote from Casey Bloys from HBO who said, kind of answering the question you just asked, where he was just like, you know, we need to have a lot of stuff, a variety on our channel. And, you know, we have dramas, we've got comedies, we've got dramedies. And he goes, we kind of needed like a closed-ended murder mystery with big stars. Why not? And like I said, I get that in the room when you're spying that thing in the room. It'd be really hard to say no to that. I would challenge any person who wants to play make-believe executive to put yourself at HBO and listen to that pitch from Reese Witherspoon and
sure.
Nicole Kidman and say no to that.
I guess so. It's just, you know, Bloodline feels more like this done by HBO, and that's on Netflix, than this mm-hmm. sounds to me, having not seen it. That sounds right. More like a soapy, big cast, but also a mystery and you know, all of that at the center of it. That you know, I don't know what that intangible, like, HBO angle is to it, but yeah, I don't know.
Well, I will say, so again, like, and Jean-Marc Vallée, who directed Dallas Buyers Club. So you have all these big people and, you know, actors and actresses signed on. But yeah, I mean, you brought up Bloodline, and as much as the problem I had with season 1 dragging, ultimately it held together when you watched the whole thing. I think it was a really solid first season and great acting and really interesting to look at. If it wasn't like super compelling to go from episode to episode, it did wrap up in a really satisfying way. I didn't think they needed a second season, but that felt way more like an HBO series because it was like a murder mystery. It was done without the soap. So I think that's what you're getting at. I think that's, you know, I think the Bloodline's way better than this. This is just so frothy as all hell. And yeah, I think I would also say, just since we're talking philosophically, that guys like Casey Bloys at HBO and people who are at Showtime, Nevins and stuff like that, they have to they have to, like, their jobs are crazy because they have to compete with Netflix. And yeah. Netflix seems to be adding anything and everything to its content bin. And it must be really deflating to be on the other side and think, oh, well, they just got this. And then now they got this movie. And now they have this, like, limited series. And, oh, they just bought, you know, Black Mirror that everybody loves. And they just greenlit, you know, these. They just get a lot of attention for everything that they do, right or wrong. And at some point, these cable channels, these premium cable channels like Starz and HBO and Showtime have to say, Jesus, how do we stock the cupboards and keep up? So maybe a little of that went into the decision for this. And also, you know, you don't know until you shoot it how bad it is. So, and look, I may be an outlier. I haven't actually looked at any other reviews. I might be an outlier, but I'm comfortable there because this was just unendurable.
Right. Well, fans of David E. Kelly, I mean, he's got a particular kind of voice, and maybe they'll enjoy seeing that with the restrictions of network taken off of him too.
Well, also, like, I mean, just quickly to add to that, it's like he seems to have done a less David E. Kelly job and gotten credit for it when he did Goliath over at Amazon. And he seems to be referring to form, but it's an adaptation. He didn't do the original, but, you know, Goliath got him some respect for branching out a little bit of his style. But yeah, this one doesn't work for me.
All right, let's move on to, I wish I could say, a happier story, but no, it's Fox's APB, which we mentioned briefly last time. Your review is up now. It premiered this past week. And what I really want to know from you is, how pure genius is it?
Well, I got to tell you, when I was watching the pilot, I was like, oh, please, can it please be more like pure genius? I want it to be hokier. It's just a really bad cops show. In my review, I quoted the excited executive producer saying, we truly believe it is the police show for the 21st century, not of the 21st century. So I was like, we think because we put bells and whistles in it, or what did they say last week? The Chicago thing said whiz bangs or whatever.
Whiz bangs. Yes.
Whiz bangs. We put those in it. People should watch it. They don't put enough in there. It's really just kind of a tepid, detective and cop series done badly. I mean, like, I was hoping that I could come back and talk to you, Jason, about the Nada thing. There's a drone. There's a drone, plays a lot of stuff in there. There's lots of big screens that put up all these. There wasn't anything that looked like, and I mentioned Minority Report in my review, like futuristically, like something like that. And even though that was ages ago, all they could come up with basically was like a bulletproof Cadillac with a big engine and it's like, and super flak jackets. I'm like, that's not really technology. And it was like, you guys are not even trying. And the whole thing revolves around an app. Like, citizens of Chicago, download this app and you can bypass the clunky 911 system. And I was like, that's your idea of, like,
okay, so let's and I saw you tweet about this. Let's talk about the bigger picture of this too, which is, this is the premise of this is basically, if you're somebody who, you know, it's money and entrepreneurship and a billionaire can solve the problem of government, right? That is kind of the argument that's being made. And it's like, we've got an app that lets you bypass where the suckers go for their crime prevention. So if you can afford the app, or you can afford a smartphone or whatever it is, then, you know, what we really need is competition for policing. And that has some very interesting political ramifications behind it that they probably didn't intend, but there they are.
Yeah, I think when they were putting this together, it wasn't the Trumpian aspects were not as they didn't think they were going to be as pronounced. And now it's like, oh, billionaire to the rescue, who doesn't listen to anybody and doesn't really fact check anything.
You've heard of charter schools? How about charter police forces?
And it's like, yeah. And I laugh because I was like, when are they going to address kind of the ridiculous part of it? And I laughed when they did, because the mayor says, and Justin Kirk, who's great, he was in Weeds and he's been in Tyrant. I know no one watched Tyrant, but he's great. And he plays the billionaire, Mr. Reeves. And the mayor says, Mr. Reeves, a civilian cannot take over a police district. And I was thought, that was actually my question. And then Reeves says, actually they can with a special appointment from this committee. And then Matt was like, okay, fixed. I was like, wow, you guys got that over and done with in just under 11 seconds. Pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. You gotta wave those premise questions away, right? So.
Yeah, and it's hokey. The acting is really bad. It's just, I mean, Justin Kirk is good, but everybody around him is like, who are you? And it's, yeah, I don't know.
All right, APB.
If you like souped up Cadillacs sliding around a corner, and I mean sliding because you have to slide around a corner if you're a cop, so mm-hmm. the tail clicked out, and then like, you know, it's like, you know, somebody calls in, dude with a knife on my block. I was like, okay,
we got a push notification. There's a dude with a knife. Let's go.
That's what it was. And there's even it's a push notification. And there's even a dismiss button. And I laughed. I was like, oh,
whatever.
Are they just going to press that?
Run faster.
Whatever. Dude with a knife. We can't take that.
All right. Oh, I have an update on Powerless, which you said, episode one didn't, you know, you said nice cast, but episode one made you wondering whether it could make it. And interestingly, they didn't provide any other episodes for review. Uh-huh. I can give you part of that story because sources tell me, I haven't seen it, but my nerd sources who have been watching Powerless report to me that generally they didn't love episode one, but I think they felt like you did, that there was something there they would watch episode two. I can now report exclusively from my sources that apparently episode two is atrociously bad, and that is probably why they didn't supply it to critics.
Yeah, that's
so
too bad.
Oh well, yeah.
Well, more time saved.
More time basically. Saved. That's right. Mm-hmm. You just mm-hmm. a clock somewhere just advanced 30 minutes by not having to watch that. So. That's what we're here for. Is we're here to save you time, everybody.
Exactly.
A couple of other shows coming that you're going to have reviews. We'll probably talk about your reviews next week. The Missing mm-hmm. is back. And that's not a new show, but it's returning. And you are going to write something about that at some point. So that's a Starz show.
It's Starz,
right?
Yeah. And they did the first season was really, really well done. Excellent. So we'll see if they can keep this going into. But. Yeah, I'm going to turn that into a critic's notebook and kind of write a bigger picture story about how do you kind of keep these things alive that aren't really meant to be full-blown series, but we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
And then the one that I'm very excited about is that Humans is back, and you're going to have a review of that also. When is that back? That's in this coming week, right?
Yeah, that's Monday. So look for that. I think people can find Humans season one on, I think, Netflix or somewhere.
But and that's AMC on Monday.
Yeah. And so I loved it. You know, you were a fan of it too.
I loved it. I'm going to always remember the summer of, I guess, 2015 as, Humans and Mr. Robot. The show with robots is called Humans, and the show about a guy is called Mr. Robot, just to be confusing. but I love them both, a lot. And the last episode, it felt like they pulled away from like the most dramatic ending. I think we talked about it because they realized they were probably going to come back for another season and they didn't want
right.
to give it all away. So, here it is. They're back with another season.
They are back. I'm super excited to see where they go from there, where they take it. And I just double checked. It's on Amazon. Season one's on Amazon.
Right.
So if you have that, you can play catch up and then it comes back on Monday. But yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Apparently they are taking it in some interesting new directions.
And to our friends in the +44, it already was on. Mm-hmm. So you already got to see it, but the bloody Americans had to wait until Monday. We waited patiently. They probably cut stuff out of it too. They're probably jerks like that, right? They're probably like extra 5 minutes that they cut out in the, oh well, bloody Americans. What can we do? Let's see what else. I had a couple news items before I read you a few questions that we got in.
Okay.
these are news items from thehollywoodreporter.com. I have one that usually I put little notes in about like what I want to talk about. All the notes for this link are it's a series of question marks. And it's
I think I know where you're going.
Okay, what is it?
A series of question marks. Are you saying you're befuddled? by this news?
I saw this headline and I went, what? And wrote down five question marks.
This must be about American Idol.
It is. Ding, ding, ding. You win. It is about, the headline is American Idol could return on NBC. And
oh
so, and also I felt like, you know, sometimes things happen in the world and you miss them. And then later you're like, wait, that guy died. Or, you know, I didn't realize that they tore down that bridge or whatever it is. Right. So I'm reading this story and first off, my jaw drops open. And then the story provides all this context of like, oh yeah, but when you talk to the producer of it 3 months ago, he said they'd totally be back. And then like 2 months ago, Ryan Seacrest said, it'll be back sooner than you'd expect. And I thought, why did nobody warn me that they were already planning on bringing, but here it is. It's even more explicit now that American Idol, the Death Star, as the real Death Star exploded and was brought back a couple movies later, the Death Star is probably going to come back because even if Fox didn't really want it anymore, it's, you know, Fox doesn't own it. Fremantle Media owns it and they are going to probably bring it back somewhere else. And they want to bring it back somewhere else, maybe with some tweaks. But so it's not going to rest for long, it sounds like. What is this? Why would NBC... I mean, NBC already has The Voice, which kind of killed American Idol. Does this just buttress NBC's new strategy of just like we're putting on lots of reality shows? And, you know, is this an interesting strategic decision for NBC to just like double down on singing reality?
Well, it's certainly curious. That would be the generous way of saying it. It's curious. I mean, I can see the
five question marks would be another
five question marks is another way to put it. I can see it from a programming standpoint of like running it, 6 months away from The Voice. So you basically have you can program your year and slot these things in far away, not far away from each other, but you won't have off time.
You'd always have a singing show because the Voice is, has been twice a year. So they would literally have to like basically have the Voice, unless they ran together, they would run consecutively across all 52 weeks. It looks like.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, it's cheaper than a scripted series. But on the downside, even though you're plugging holes in your schedule and maybe saving some money and you're thinking like, oh, and look, this goes back to me saying, you know, a year ago that the networks were doing right by doing these retread franchises, mostly movies, but something that people don't have to understand, like, what is the missing? Like, that doesn't work on network television because they're like, I don't know. But like, if they like, oh, you know, what is Lethal Weapon? Oh, I know what that is. Yeah. And they'll come back Training Day. This is why they do those things. So
American Idol.
It does make sense.
Everybody
on a
knows
retread,
it.
Right? To do American Idol retread. But the part that doesn't make sense is like, yeah, The Voice killed it. And you're not going to have, you're not going to have the man who basically put American Idol on the map doing it. So
my other question is why, if Fremantle Media wanted to bring it back, you know, without too long a rest, and NBC is interested in it, doesn't that make the next question be why did Fox decide to kill it?
Sure. I mean, that's, I think that was... I wonder if that was the current regime. It all bleeds together. It might be the previous regime, but you know, they don't own it. And
well,
it only makes sense these days to get it to either be a partner or, you know, so to like a co-production, co-pro, or it's really weird that shows are made somewhere else like Fremantle and then come over. It doesn't happen that often.
Right, because this was a UK pickup, which is because it was Pop Idol in the UK, and that's why.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I don't know what NBC's thinking there, unless there's... Usually you want to sign on and have a little bit of some points or get some money out of it.
It does. One thing that I saw in that story is that they are thinking about reconceptualizing the show a little bit and tearing it down for a couple of years and doing a new version with a better idea of, you know, 2017, 2018 technology instead of, you know, where everybody's going to call in on their phone in 2005.
Right.
And maybe they put some other interesting reality twists, and who knows, but it does give them the opportunity to kind of reconceptualize it and say, well, this is the new American Idol. But on another level, it's just like, well, this is Coca-Cola Classic, which is, it's a new can, but it's the same stuff that's in it. So,
right.
I don't know.
And maybe it goes back again to what we talked about, HBO being impossible to turn that down. Big Little yeah. Lies, when you hear it. These execs are under a lot of pressure. And so, like, when they're thinking, this was at one point the Death Star, it's almost like picking up an aging quarterback. You know?
Oh, yeah, it's like, right.
How many more touchdowns does that arm have in it?
But it's a big GM, name. Big name. Nobody's going to, you know, right? Everybody's going to be really excited that you got Joe Montana for the uh-huh. Kansas City Chiefs. But
right?
Does he have anything left?
What's left? Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe. And the answer is maybe he does have a year or two left. And maybe it's worth it to pay them for 5 years of performance when they're really only going to get two. If you're NBC, I mean, not to blow this metaphor out of the water, but you know, maybe for NBC's business it does make sense, and maybe it didn't make sense for Fox, but who knows.
Yeah, that part I don't think we're ever gonna know, but I mean, that's
yeah,
I can see the gamble, because I can see that little light bulb go on above their heads, like, huh, what if it did come back and it was good and it re-got, you know, what it used to do, because it was a monster. I mean, it really changed television. So I don't know.
All right, do you want to do a few quick letters?
Sure.
All right. CJ from the +34, that's Spain.
Spain.
Wrote in to say two things. One, how much do you miss John Oliver? Good news, coming back. Miss him a lot. Coming back Sunday.
He's coming back Sunday. Yeah, 2 days from now.
Yeah, woo-hoo. So that's exciting. And one that I'm particularly interested in, do you think Hulu will be offered internationally in the near future now that it's focusing on creating its own content?
Yes, I think I don't know what legal hoops it has to jump through with its co-owners being all these American networks. I don't know about that. Would they want to do that? Yeah, I mean, there's so much money out there. The money is international.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. There's no doubt about it. This is what, if Netflix was only an American and Canadian thing, you can't get that many subscribers. And if you want to spend as much money as they do, you have to go internationally. Like, and I've said this before, that's how they make their money. They go to another country, they plant their flag, and then hundreds and, you know, thousands upon thousands of people sign up, and it's just money in the bank.
Well, you know, that story about the new Star Trek show that's going to be on CBS All Access, and Les Moonves said, you know, it was in the black before they hired anybody to work on it, basically, because they sold it internationally. And that's before picking up subscribers on CBS All Access. Just the international sales paid for that show. And everything else is profit. And it's... I think if Hulu's only choices are either roll out their own product overseas or they're buying those shows cheap and letting the studios who make them sell them to every other market, that doesn't sound like a very good, like, they probably want to use it to launch their own international brand, I would think.
Yeah, I think they can package it like it is, where you don't let somebody, you know, it's a much more coherent product if it's like, here's all this American television stuff that you can watch. Plus, we have all of our originals, and as we expand, and they're doing a great job. I think that, you know, Hulu's been taking some big chances.
Yeah.
But
here's a one from Jason from the 864, who writes in to say, Travelers and Victoria are two of my favorite shows. I was going to skip them both until I heard Jason and Tim discuss them on the TV Talk Machine. Thank you, Jason from the 864. Travelers got picked up by Netflix and its network in Canada for another season, which makes me happy. What makes me unhappy, of course, is that Netflix is going to do its thing, which I think it also does for American shows that it shows overseas, which is if it's picking up a show that's released weekly on a channel in the U.S., it waits until it's all aired and then it drops the whole season internationally. And with Travelers it'll be the reverse. It'll air like all fall in Canada, and then at the end when it's aired it'll drop. And you know what that does? That does piracy. I get that Netflix wants its binges, but it'll also lead to piracy. So oh well.
It does do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we provided a service.
We did. We are helping people. We are telling them what not to watch. We are telling them what to watch. It's amazing. Really. Mm-hmm. Yay for us. Hooray for us. And we do it simultaneously worldwide every week. Dean of the 707, of course, our traveler, residing now in the 559, says, Do either of you ever find yourself prejudiced against somebody, judging somebody because of the TV shows they like or dislike? On our cross-country trip, we've sometimes watched TV with the people that hosted us. Sometimes they graciously watched our state TV shows with us, Parks and Recreation, Mary Tyler Moore, but we usually watched whatever they usually watched. So in a couple of homes, that meant watching multiple episodes of Blue Bloods on Netflix. There was an evening of Fixer Upper on HGTV. We watched the season finale of The Voice. We averted the TV version of Lethal Weapon by suggesting a film on Netflix. None of these things are what we'd watch on our own. Still, it was obvious from the fact they were hosting us that they were gracious and kind people. But what if somebody had suggested watching Honey Boo Boo? Would we have left the home and headed for the local Econol Lodge? So the question is, have either of you found yourselves thinking less of a person because of TV choices?
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. That's a good one. I think if Honey Boo Boo came on, that would be a real moral conundrum, or even like, 18 Kids and Counting or whatever the other one. You're going to have to go to the Econol Lodge to not endorse that.
One of the great things about there being so much TV is there's something for everybody. But, you know, being forced to watch what everybody else wants is also kind of, if there's something for everybody, it's probably focused on them, which I think makes it also less likely to appeal to you. Although I like that sometimes when you take a vacation, you visit somebody and you're exposed to some show that you would never otherwise watch. And there's a moment of like, oh, yeah, I'm interested. I would never have chosen this on my own. I kind of like that. Do I judge them? Maybe. I try not to, but maybe. But I still find it kind of nice to walk a... Well, you wouldn't walk a mile because it's watching TV. So, like, sit an hour in another person's mm-hmm. sofa.
I, on the other hand, am super judgy. This is what I do for a living.
You get paid to judge
anyway. Yeah, I get paid to judge, and I would be judgy anyway. I'm already judgy about Trump supporters. We know that.
Yeah, we know
I'm judgy about like everything. Like, but you know what? It's funny. He brings up a good point though, because you're in somebody else's home. That's not what you would want. But I learned a very valuable lesson in my own home about being judgy. And I was like, okay, is this just teenagers doing not what their parents want them to do? But hysterically, and I think my daughter gets a kick out of it, she likes crappy cop shows. And so she'll ask me, like, you know, because we don't really talk TV that much in my house. We talk much more music. But my daughter was like, hey, can I watch Criminal Minds? And she's like, some of the people at school watch it. And I was like, oh, I hate Criminal Minds. It's like fetishizes killing women.
Yep.
And, and she's a total feminist. So she said, okay, I won't watch that. And I was like, well, there's a lot of crappy cops. So she's like, oh, tell me about it. I binge watched all of Flashpoint. And her and I have joked because she and her mom like Scandal. And I was like, well, you guys do what you got to do. That's not going to happen in my house.
Not on my watch.
But she's so I can't judge her for I can make fun of her poor TV choices, but I did give her a list of shows, better cop shows. And I told her like, I think you would like Southland better. And I think she thought that was a pretty good pick. She started it. And then I told her, I gave her my list of like best cop shows ever. And I concluded with The Wire, and she's like, well, can I watch The Wire? I'm like, oh, absolutely. So if I can turn my own teen daughter into watching The Wire, that'd be good. But right now she's starting with Southland.
All right, cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know. See?
I'm not judging her watching Flashpoint, but I am kind of judging her watching Scandal.
Fair enough. Let's move on to Luke from Australia. I just wanted to say he sent in something not TV related, but thought he might like this article. The headline, Drop Bear Lane Gets a Go-Ahead, proves to be positive move for the Tamworth Council. That Tamworth is a place in New South Wales preparing to unveil a street named after an icon of Australian folklore. So when you are in Tamworth, New South Wales, Australia, please visit Drop Bear Lane and keep looking up, is what mm-hmm. I say.
Yeah. They call it folklore. No, those things are real.
It's all part of their publicity plan to get you to think that there aren't drop bears, but we know better.
We know, but yeah, it's like a reverse psychological smackdown.
They do stuff like that in Australia. South of the equator, there's a lot of reverse psychology. They call it psychology down there.
It's not only the drains that go backwards.
No.
We see what you're doing, Australia, with your crazy drop bears and your snakes.
We watch you. We know. We know what's going on down there. L. Butler on Twitter sent in a not a thing, which is that planes do not crash when they lose one engine unless they only have one engine. That's a good point.
That's a good point. It's a very, also good to know when you're flying.
Yeah, that's right. Two engines, it's fine. You're going to probably be fine. Eric on Twitter said, my opt-out moment for the new 24, the boss lady uses a taser on her hand-picked successor because drama slash reasons. It makes no sense. That's a good one.
Yeah. They use tasers in APB too.
Oh, but good.
They're high-tech tasers. They shoot farther.
Are they laser tasers?
They could be laser tasers.
That would be pretty great. Mm-hmm. Here's not a thing from Michael in the 650.
Okay.
He says, I admit this may be more of a pet peeve than a not a thing. You can write me off as neurotic if you want. I went back and watched a few episodes of the now defunct CBS show Limitless on Netflix, in my opinion, extremely underrated. My wife watched that show and really liked it, too. As you'll recall, one of the show's central premises is this doofus takes a pill and it transforms him into a genius. Yes, that is the show. In any event, almost every time he takes the pill, the main character happily pops it in his mouth and swallows it without drinking anything to wash it down. Am I crazy? Do people in real life routinely choke down pills without drinking any liquid? And it's not just this series. It happens regularly in other movies and TV shows. Is this not a thing, or is this a thing? Love the podcast, Michael in the 650.
That's nice.
Dry swallowing a
dry
pill.
Dry swallowing. I think it's...
I do it.
What?
I'm a dry swallower. I don't always do it. I have decided that it's always better to make sure that the pill gets all the way down by washing it down with water. But in a pinch and for most of my life, sure, dry swallowing pills. Yeah, I do it.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
Man, you learn something new every day on this podcast or every week. You're a dry swallower.
I am a dry swallower.
Wow.
It's yeah, I've also got a drop bear in my backyard, Tim. I had to break it to you.
I need as much liquid as possible to get those things down.
Yeah, my kids are like that, but I always, for whatever reason. So, Michael, I think the answer is it is a thing for some people. So now for every character on TV, probably not a thing.
Well, it saves precious seconds of watching them drink.
About half a glass of water. Yeah, that's right. They can just pop it in there.
And slows things down.
It's magic TV pills. They're the best. Okay, one more. Chris from the 845. Longtime listener, first time caller, just wondered what you were thinking of actors and producers telling people on Twitter that they need to watch this week's episode live. This happened on two shows I watched this week, Jane the Virgin and The Magicians. In both episodes, there were major character changes, shall we say?
Yes,
I think they killed people off. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred not knowing something big was coming. What do you think?
Yes, I think by if you don't do that on a weekly basis, so that people just are obfuscated or have no idea what's happening. I think what you're saying is we're going to kill someone. Watch tonight. I think that's not good because it takes the drama of the death away because you probably know who it is or who it's likely to be. And certainly, you know, as the drama quotes, I have air quotes over that, leads up to the inevitable pointing to the person who's probably going to get it. You're like, oh, it's him. Whereas if you just watched The Cold, you would not have known that. You'd been like, what? Yeah. And also, I think, of course, they kind of are pushed to do that because you do want live plus same day on your watching. But I don't know if that's really a thing that can work in this day and age. I mean, I almost never watch anything live.
Yeah, the other thing I was going to say is that another problem I have with this is that a lot of these channels, this is a West Coast, this is an East Coast bias thing, but it kills me that all these channels have shifted to have Pacific feed versions of their shows. There was a while when the HD switchover happened where it was just on, if it was on at 8 Eastern, it was on at 5 Pacific, and then they would do a reshow at like 8 Pacific that was 11 Eastern. They just show the same primetime twice. And now they don't. And what happens is not only is that really annoying because there's a show that's on really late that I want to watch and I can't because it hasn't aired on the West Coast, but so much Twitter promotion and social media promotion is timed to the East Coast airing because everywhere else in the country they get it then. So I have these Twitter accounts that I like to follow and I have to unfollow them because they're like live tweeting the show as it's being broadcast on the East Coast. And I just can't do that because I'm not seeing it and I can't DVR your tweets for later. So that also really bugs me because, you know, then they say, oh, you got to watch it live because everybody's going to be talking about it. And it's like, yeah, I can't watch it live. So I'm not going to
so
do that.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, but and it is a, there's a Boy Cried Wolf thing there, too, which is, of course, they want you to watch it live. But come on, you know, do people
it
do
does,
that?
It does spoil. It pre-spoils things.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. It's a big episode. You should really watch. It's a big episode. They're going to kill somebody. All right. Well, that's the end of our letters. So I think we're done for today. Tight and bright.
Tight and bright.
45 minutes. You can please send us your thoughts. Podcast at tvtalkmachine.com. Tweet at us at TVTM or post on our Facebook group, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. Those are the ways to get to us. You can tweet us personally. I am Jay Snell on Twitter and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. And that's it. We're done. But we'll be back. There's always more TV, right? Always more.
Always more TV, always more Drop Bears.
Always. Whoa. We'll see you next time on Drop Bear Lane.